Support for National Public Radio comes from the Pew Charitable Trusts, investing in ideas, returning results. www.pewtrusts.com.
Education reporting on Minnesota Public Radio is supported by Hamline University School of Law, educating lawyers committed to public service and ethics for more than 25 years.
4 minutes now past 12 o'clock. Good afternoon. Welcome back to Midday here on Minnesota Public Radio. I'm Gary Eichten, and today we are looking back at yesterday and looking ahead to November. Minnesota voters, of course, yesterday selected the candidates who will appear on the November general election ballot. And today on Midday, we're taking a closer look at those primary election results, what they mean, and what we can expect during the fall campaign, which officially gets underway today. Chris Gilbert, chair of the Political Science Department at Gustavus Adolphus College, has joined us. And if you'd like to join our conversation, give us a call. Our Twin City area number, 651-227-6000. Outside the Twin Cities, 1-800-242-2828. Chris, welcome back to Hour 2.
Good to be with you for a second hour.
I suppose we should once again run down some of the election results from yesterday for those of you who may have missed them. And, of course, the major item topping the agenda yesterday was the race for the U.S. Senate. And once again in the DFL primary, Mark Dayton won that contest, 41%. Mike Cerisi was second, 22%. Jerry Janicich third at 21%. Rebecca Yanish at 15%. In the Independent Party primary, James Gibson won 47% to Leslie Davis, who finished second, 25%. Buford Johnson with 20%. Fred Askew with 8%. In the Constitution Party primary, David Swan defeated Derek Schramm, 63% to 27%. Republican incumbent Senator Rod Grams had only token opposition and cruised to easy nomination victory, 89% to 11% over Bill Dunn. And last hour, we heard from Mark Dayton, we heard from James Gibson, and now we've been joined by Senator Rod Grams. Good afternoon, Senator.
Good afternoon, Gary. Nice talking with you again.
Good talking with you. And again, congratulations on that victory last night.
Thank you very much. We worked hard at it. I mean, there was a lot of things that we needed to do to win, and not only just in our primary, but really to get ready for what's going to be a very intense 8 weeks of this campaign.
We heard from Mark Dayton last hour. Mm-hmm. He met with reporters, and he essentially said that he hopes you'll call off or stop what he calls juvenile name-calling.
I heard about that, but, you know, all I was saying basically, and, I don't want to get into name-calling. I was just trying to probably put him on the political scale where I think he's comfortable. You know, he called Senator Wellstone, I think he called him the best senator in the U.S. Senate today, and Paul is, doesn't back away from the label of being liberal, and I just thought that when you look at Mark's the issues and the positions he has taken, that is a very liberal position. So without calling Mark a liberal, if that's what he's talking about, but the positions that he has taken, I think, are very liberal and really not in touch with reality at all. And so that's what I was talking about. Not into name calling. I'm not into that, but I'm just trying to really, I think, let the voters know the differences between the positions and the programs that Mark Dayton has taken and supported compared to the issues that I am supporting at this time.
Do you think, Senator, the campaign will be able to remain focused on the issues, or as time rolls along, it's going to get a little nastier?
Well, I don't see why it should get nasty. You know, there's nothing that I want to talk about Mark Dayton except for the fact that, where we disagree or agree on the issues. And so I have no intention of going, quote, negative or personal. I think the voters of Minnesota want to hear the issues. I think they want to hear the positions that Mr. Dayton has taken and the positions that I am taking. And that's where I think this campaign is going to be focused on.
Do you think the third-party candidates, actually there are four major party candidates who are going to be in the race, are they going to play a role here, or is this, as far as you can see, really pretty much a head-to-head battle with Mark Dayton?
Well, again, and I don't discount the others. You know, they're going to run hard and do the things they think they need to do, but I think history shows that this is going to be primarily a race between Mark Dayton and myself. And, the third-party candidates are going to probably have some impact, and I don't know to what degree. that they will have. But right now, I'm concentrating on Mark Dayton, and that's where our campaign is going to go.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Dayton, this morning talked at some length about your Social Security plan, mm-hmm. and seemed to indicate that that was certainly going to be one of the big issues that's going to be discussed this fall. Do you think, in fact, that that's going to play a major role in deciding who wins this election, just how voters, what they think about this Social Security debate?
Well, it is a very important issue to all voters in Minnesota, no matter what age group you're in. And, Gary, I think it's kind of funny that, Mark Dayton and the other Democratic opponents spent up to about $12 million basically to scare senior citizens when it came to issues like health care, prescription drugs, Social Security, basically distorting my record and positions on these and saying that literally I wanted to tear apart or tear down Social Security as we know it, and that's not true at all. In fact, my plan first and foremost says we have to guarantee seniors their benefits, and I'm the one who has done that in Congress. I've introduced bills to improve their COLAs. I've introduced bills and passed them that is not going to expose their income the taxation, such as the Clinton Social Security tax of 1993. So I've been out there working and preserving Social Security and benefits for our senior citizens. And then I know he talks about putting all their money at risk in the stock market. And Gary, as I've said so many times, my plan, you could go through a whole lifetime investing and never put one dime into stocks. There are so many good and safe investments outside of the stock market that are much better, higher yields than Social Security. And in fact, today, if you would invest all your money in a passbook savings account in your bank, you would get three times more money than Social Security will pay you. So, no, he's out there trying to distort and scare, and that's where I think we really got to come to terms on these positions and what our records are. And so right there, coming up with a tax like that, I think what we need to do is educate Minnesotans on our records and Mr. Dayton's position and let them decide.
Senator, are you going to get bogged down in Washington this fall with protracted budget negotiations, which would prevent you from coming back here to campaign, or do you think work will be wrapped up quickly and so you can come back and get your message out?
No, we'll be back in Minnesota to get the message out. I know this month is going to be very tough, but that's on me because I know Mr. Dayton is going to be able to be back there spending a lot of money on ads and doing the campaigning, and I'm going to be here in Washington working, but that's, the job Minnesotans elected me to do, and I'm going to work very hard to meet that responsibility. But every chance I get, I'll be back in Minnesota campaigning, and October will be, the last 4 weeks of the race. I'll be in Minnesota the majority of the time. There might be a time or two we have to come back to Washington, but the business will not, I think, be protracted to a point where it's going to interfere with that. So I'm looking forward to a good race, and, again, I congratulate Mark on his win last night, and I'm looking forward to talking with him, discussing the issues, and I think those issues are really what the focus of this whole campaign is going to be about.
Thank you, Senator. Appreciate you joining us.
Okay, Gary. Thank you.
Minnesota Republican Senator Rod Grams, who easily won renomination to the U.S. Senate. Chris Gilbert, hear anything in what the senator had to say that particularly struck you in terms of what we can expect for November?
Well, as you mentioned, Gary, we heard from Mark Dayton in the first hour and from James Gibson, and Dayton spent a lot of time critiquing Grams' Social Security plans, and the senator focused in on the specifics of his plan. Minnesota voters are going to hear a lot about competing conceptions of, number one, whether things are wrong with the Social Security system, and number two, what to do about them. It's going to require some careful attention because on both sides, most independent analysts who look at competing plans suggest that everybody's math is a little bit faulty. And so it's going to be important for Minnesotans to sort out the truth from the embellishments on that important issue. Dayton did very, very well among older voters in Social Security and prescription drugs, and that certainly is not lost on Senator Grams and his advisors. Older voters in recent years have tended to go more Democrat, but that's not necessarily true. They tend to go Democrat primarily because of issues, which means that a Republican with the right prescription on those things that face seniors and folks approaching retirement age more than others can break in and can do well, and that's obviously a voter group that also turns out in high numbers. So I think you can see a battle for the hearts and minds of older voters in particular. The other thing that will be interesting for the Grams Lawrence campaign. I mentioned this in the first hour. He did benefit in 1994 from a strong Republican also running in the state, Governor Carlson, who won, you know, smashing victory over John Marty in the governor's race. A little bit of coattails doesn't hurt in a close race. The Bush campaign, at least as it looks right now, is not likely to have those coattails. The numbers looked okay in the early summer, but just as nationwide, the Bush-Cheney ticket is somewhat stalled. So Senator Grams isn't going to have that kind of assistance. He certainly has more of his own record than he did in 1994, where he had only one term in the U.S. House to fall back on. He has had 6 years now, 8 years in Washington, six in the Senate, to build a longer record of accomplishment and of legislative interest. But still, not having that additional advantage makes it a little bit different race. And the other thing I mentioned in the first hour, Mark Dayton is likely to be able to outspend Senator Grams unless we see a lot of money coming in from outside, from the Republican Senatorial Campaign Committee, to help hold this seat for the Republican Party. And that's also a twist on the traditional incumbent versus challenger setup. That doesn't necessarily bode poorly for Senator Grams. He is known by Minnesotans, but also suggests that there's no deficit here that a challenger normally has to overcome to be able to get his or her name out there, let alone to convince voters that he or she is a good bet to unseat the incumbent.
Chris Gilbert is the chair of the Political Science Department at Gustavus Adolphus College in St. Peter. He's come up to St. Paul today to join us as we take a look at yesterday's election results, look ahead to November as well. Mike Erlandson is on the line now. He is the chair of the DFL party. And good afternoon, Mr. Erlandson.
Good afternoon, Gary. Good afternoon, Chris.
Good afternoon, Mike.
Now, your endorsed candidate, Jerry Janosich, did not make it past yesterday's primary. Should we read into that another sign that the endorsement process is dead in the water?
Well, I don't think the endorsement process is dead in the water. I think that we have to challenge our political party and continue to challenge it to make sure that when we endorse it, Jerry was just like Mike and Rebecca and Mark. On the issues, they were basically the same. They were all good candidates. They're all likable people. But the ability to put together the massive amount of resources that it takes to run a statewide campaign today underneath the current campaign finance rules, et cetera, is very, very difficult for a political party and a candidate that doesn't have the ability to tap into either personal resources or to some direct line into a lot of other resources. And so I think we have to take a look at that piece of the puzzle as well and evaluate how to compete statewide when so much of it's devoted on financial resources. So I think the advantage of any one of our four candidates that came out of this is that they'll be able to mount great campaigns. In this case, it would be Mark Dayton against Senator Grams. And one of their issues is going to be trying to take a look at how do we make it so that Jerry Janosich has a better ability to compete not only in a primary, but certainly in the general election as well, because of all the money in politics today. And that's something that Democrats and Republicans in Washington, D.C. have been unable to grapple with because it is such a complicated issue and there's such great division. And one of the things that concerns me is I watch more and more money go into campaigns, more and more money go into political parties, and then that money all dwarfed by these independent groups out there is how do we, when does it implode? When do the citizens and the Minnesota and across the country find that they are right, there really is way too much money in politics, and we see something as crazy as we saw 5-6 years ago, and shortly after the Republicans took over control of the United States Congress, they increased the minimum wage, because that's what the American people were screaming for. So
Mike,
we got to get the finance up a little higher.
Okay, Chris Gilbert has a question for you, Mike.
Well, Mike,
sure.
I guess it's easy the day after the election to sort of critique what you did, but what could you have done more to help Jerry Janosich? I mean, there was no secret that Mark Dayton had resources and was probably willing to spend them. No secret that Mike Cerisi was also there. You know, the good news for your party is you generated seven very good, you know, Senate candidates, three of whom stepped out after the endorsement. You had a very good group of four. Any of those other three, Kelly, Lillehog, or Miles, would have also been worthy additions to the race, and yet nothing really seemed to happen to help the Janosich campaign connect with voters, even to the point where low voter turnout turned out to be a good thing, which I know is something, as a party chair, it must be hard for you to want to advocate if it's the only way to help your endorsed candidate do better. What do you think you could have done? What is the answer for the party to help address the fact that knowing there are two people, especially in the race, and Rebecca Yanish did very well raising money as well, that Jerry was going to face that kind of resource deficit?
I don't think any of us had the any concept that it was going to be, as Senator Graham's just pointed out, $10 to $12 million spent in the Democratic primary. I think that for Jerry to do as well as he did yesterday, with you know, a few $100,000 spent on his behalf and a few $100,000 spent by the party, to come in almost second place against ahead of a candidate that spent over a couple million and just behind a candidate that may have spent $5 million, was one heck of an accomplishment for Jerry's campaign and the political party, regardless of the turnout, because we've seen high voter turnout and low voter turnout in primaries and in general elections be determining factors, regardless of the amount of money spent in these elections for years. And so I think that the what we have to challenge, not the political parties do, but all of us that are delegates that get the opportunities to make the choice to support a candidate, is we have to make sure we take into account what we think is going to have to be raised in resources, and can we get there? And maybe that means we have to endorse somebody with more resources once, so we can send a couple more people to Washington, D.C. to make the case for campaign finance reform, so that guys like Jerry Janusich have a chance here. If, in fact, it becomes all money, and you can't get there without the money underneath the current system.
All right. Thanks, Mike. Appreciate it.
All right. Thank you, guys.
DFL State Party Chair Mike Erlandson joining us on this day after the primary election. And his Republican counterpart, Ron Ebensteiner, is on the line now. Good afternoon, Mr. Ebensteiner.
Good afternoon. How are you doing?
Well, I'm just fine. Optimistic, are you, as the general election campaign begins now? It's kind of a quiet night for you and primary night.
Well, yes, we are very optimistic. But I was just hearing Mike talk about the endorsement process in the Democratic Party. And I think, Gary, you had it absolutely right. The endorsement process in the Democratic Party is dead in the water. What happened on the Democratic side yesterday, I don't think would ever happen on the Republican side. We have a very strong party. It's well organized. Our endorsement process is intact. None of our endorsed candidates, probably there's a possibility of one of our endorsed candidates for state legislature not winning in the primary. But by and large, we're a very strong party. Our endorsement process works. And because it works, a multimillionaire like Mark Dayton would not get elected on our side.
Why not?
Well, simply because a multimillionaire cannot buy the seat, no matter how much money he has at his disposal. We are a party that's very organized. We support our endorsed candidates. And, you know, if we had a multimillionaire trying to buy the Senate seat, it just wouldn't go over. Our endorsement process is very strong and intact.
How do you see the Senate race playing out, Mr. Ebensteiner?
The Senate race, it will be a lot of fun coming up in the fall election here in about 8 weeks. It will be a lot of fun comparing the two candidates, Grams versus Dayton. Grams is a person, you know, from humble beginnings. He's worked hard all of his life. He's kind of a pull-it-up-from-the-bootstrap sort of individual. Contrast that with someone who's had a very privileged upbringing, never really had to put a full day's work in his entire life. It's inherited wealth, and he's taken that wealth, and he wants to buy a Senate seat. I don't think that's going to go over very well in the state of Minnesota. And, you know, for a person like that, it's very hard to relate to people who have to go to work every day, try and make ends meet, people out in the rural areas in the 7th and 8th and the 1st and 2nd district. So from our perspective, this is going to be a lot of fun to make that comparison and contrast the two individuals.
In that 4th district congressional race, can your candidate, Linda Runbeck, win that congressional seat if Tom Foley, the independent party candidate, doesn't do very well?
Well, I think so. I do think we have a very good chance of picking up that seat. Obviously, Tom Foley's entry into the race makes it interesting, makes it more interesting. He definitely, as a former DFLer or current DFLer, will be draining votes away from Betty McCollum. But, you know, whatever they do, that's their business. We're going to run a very spirited campaign. We want to get the majority of the votes in the 4th District. And if we get close to a majority, because of Foley in the race, we think we'll be in good shape.
All right. Thank you, sir. Appreciate you joining us.
You're welcome.
Ron Ebensteiner, who is chair of the Minnesota Republican Party. Chris Gilbert?
Republicans have had their share of problems in the recent past with their endorsement process. I think of Alan Quist in 1994, and Minnesota voters put the Republican Party, the independent Republican Party in those days, in its place, correctly, I think, returning Governor Carlson to the IR ticket and eventually to victory. If a multimillionaire came along in the Republican Party, there's no reason why such a person could not use those resources to appeal to voters. It's easy to jump to the conclusion that Mark Dayton bought the seat. And I think Mr. Dayton will also be able to counter the charge that he's essentially sat on his wealth for most of his life. And once we get past the life stories, which would show that Mr. Dayton has devoted his life to public service and hasn't just sat and played tennis at the country club, but has gotten out there and served in various ways, I think we'll get to issues which will make some important distinctions between all four of the candidates. The Republicans are susceptible to those same kinds of problems, quote unquote, that we've had on the Democratic side. But as I've mentioned before, what matters is not that you have money, it's what you do with it and whether you do effective things with it at the right times in campaigns. And it's still not an exact science, despite what winning campaign strategists would have us believe. Dayton ran good ads. He capitalized on his name recognition, capitalized on issues that mattered to Minnesota DFL primary voters, and that enabled him to jump out in front of a field of good, credible candidates who also had substance, and at least with the exception of Janicic, till near the end, had resources to be able also to get their message out. It's going to be a very interesting race. All four candidates offer something very, very different. Even Mr. Swan, who we've not talked about a lot, the Constitution Party, just with major party status, you know, this is an important chance for them to build on what is a relatively limited base. I think less than 1,500 people voted in the Constitution Party Senate primary yesterday, to build on that limited base and see what support there is out there for a strong, limiting government, almost libertarian kind of approach. It's going to be a very interesting Senate race. The Runbeck, McCollum, and Foley as the third person in the 4th Congressional District is also interesting. In their best-case scenario, the Republicans might think George Bush could steal Minnesota, and I think they would target the 2nd, 4th, and 6th Congressional Districts as places where they could possibly pull off an upset. A rematch, Bill Luther and John Klein in the 6th, a new challenger for David Mingy in the 2nd, and Mark Kennedy, who has raised over $500,000, which is very impressive for a challenger against a four-term incumbent. The best-case scenario doesn't always come true, but if Rod Grams comes through, that makes a lot of those other things possible for the Republican Party this time around.
Chris Gilbert is the chair of the Political Science Department at Gustavus Adolphus College in St. Peter. We're talking today about the primary election results from yesterday, looking ahead to the November general election. If you'd like to join our conversation, 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828. Al's on the line from Eden Prairie with a comment. Al, go ahead, please.
Hey, good afternoon. Couple really quick comments. First of all, I'll be one of the vast majority of the people that did not vote yesterday. Mm-hmm. The reason was the main reason was I found out very early yesterday that if I wanted to vote for who I wanted to vote for, I was limited to voting for about a quarter of them. You're stuck with, I mean, this isn't communism. You're stuck with the ticket that your primary person or your favorite person is with. You have to vote the rest of the way. That's criminal. That's insane, in my opinion. I feel you should be able to vote for whoever you choose and whatever party they may be in.
Right. We should note that the U.S. Supreme Court ruled this spring that to do otherwise, mm-hmm. to allow you to cross back and forth in a primary election, not a general election, primary election, would be unconstitutional. In fact, they threw that law out, threw out a law like that in California.
But okay, I wasn't aware of that, but I still think that's wrong. But, well, if they've spoken. Number two, Betty, you had on the contestant who won by 50%.
Betty McCollum. Yes.
Yeah, I thought it was really interesting how she was being such a politician when she was answering your questions and never answered directly two or three of your questions. You pointed to her directly. She always was evasive, which I thought was really interesting, very, very politician-like. Third thing is I just heard the gentleman from the Republican Party mention that Republicans never have a problem with their nominating process and such, and it was the gentleman that was on the air with you correctly mentioned, which I just was laughing before I got on the air, that, now wait a minute, I remember back when the extremists in 94 went against their current governor. Give me a break, guys. Don't tell me you're so unified and everything, can't buy elections and such. You guys are, at least then were controlled by what I feel is extreme. Well, both parties a number of times are controlled by the extremes on either side because there's such a limited number of people involved. So, you know, don't say that you're not controlled or going with, you know, the non-popular person because you history shows you're wrong. That's my comments.
Thanks for your comments.
You bet. Well,
we should note, again, as Al pointed out at the beginning, he did have a lot of company yesterday. Only 16.2% of Minnesota's eligible voters actually voted in the primary election yesterday. This despite some lively contests, a statewide Senate race, lots of advertising, so it would be difficult not to know there was going to be an election. But, boy, most people, Chris, just decided to sit it out.
Yeah, Al's comments about the structure were echoed by a previous caller that you can only vote for one party. Like most states, Minnesota has a primary system organized around the political parties, and so you must choose a ballot, a party, and you can only vote for the candidates, which does limit you. It would be strange to vote for more than one Senate candidate in the end, but there are states, Louisiana, I think, is the best example, that have open primaries. Anybody can run. If one candidate gets 50% of all the votes, and generally it's a very crowded field, that person wins. That takes care of the general election. But more often than not, one Republican and one Democrat rise to the top, and then those two, sometimes the top three, but usually the top two challengers advance to the general election. That is a way of getting around this problem that Al mentioned, where it's a party-centered system. And given the way in which people feel that political parties either don't serve their interests or are too extreme, and I think that charge can be leveled sometimes at the convention goers, that the DFL convention goers are probably more liberal than the typical Minnesota Democratic voter, and the same is true on the Republican side, more conservative than the typical voter. It maybe is not surprising that parties have driven people away from seeing political parties as the way to organize the electorate, and the primary election system is just one example.
Let's get one more caller on here before we break for news headlines. Rick, a comment, please?
My biggest issue with the election process here in Minnesota is that it's very difficult to get information on candidates and their positions. You know, unless you partake in the, you know, the local news, which, you know, those aspects can be I guess the quality of the information is somewhat, not necessarily suspect, but they're
superficial, maybe?
Well, superficial, yes. I think that's a good comment there.
Let me ask you this, Rick, because we have to take a break here.
Okay.
What source of information, what kind of information that's currently not available would you like to have available? Where would you like to be able to turn for the information that you want?
I previously lived in California, which had a great system of providing information, candidate statements, and the biggest aspect was that you knew exactly who you were voting for. You know, my biggest problem was that, you know, in yesterday's election, I didn't know who I was voting for, so I didn't know who to gather information on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that wasn't an issue for the Senate race, but it was for lower races.
I see. Okay. Well, thanks for the comment, Rick. Appreciate it. We're talking this hour about yesterday's primary election, looking ahead to the November general election as well. The candidates have been selected now for the general election. Chris Gilbert is here to talk about yesterday's results, look ahead to November. And again, we ask you, or invite you, rather, to join our conversation, 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828. We'll get to more of your calls, and we'll have some more interviews in just a couple of minutes. Right now, news headlines. Here's Stephen Johns. Stephen?
Thank you, Gary. The House has failed to override President Clinton's veto concerning the so-called marriage penalty. Republicans fell short of the two-thirds needed to keep the $292 billion tax cut alive. Democrats instead favor a more modest tax cut targeting middle-class couples. The White House is threatening trade sanctions if Japan doesn't halt its whaling operations. Commercial whaling was banned in 1986, but the Japanese retained the right to kill whales for scientific purposes, and Tokyo recently expanded its whale hunt with a plan to harvest 600 whales in the next year. New trade figures indicate Americans are showing a record demand for foreign goods. The Commerce Department says the trade deficit soared to $106 billion in the second quarter. Critics say in an otherwise strong economy, trade deficits are costing thousands of Americans their jobs. Northwest Airlines has joined a price war touched off by United Airlines, which reduced some prices to win back business after a tough summer. United cut fares in half on many of its domestic round-trip flights through December 14th. Northwest, meanwhile, has announced plans intended to bring it more in line with its competitors, changes that include providing a roomier World Business Class on its international flights. A man convicted of shooting two bankers at a southwestern Minnesota farm 17 years ago has for the first time admitted to the killings. Stephen Jenkins Anderson was barely 18 when he was convicted in 1984. Anderson admitted that he killed Rudy Blythe and Toby Tulin in a nationally televised documentary on the Arts and Entertainment Network Monday night. The case spurred a nationwide manhunt and drew national attention to the region and the farm crisis of the 1980s. The forecast calling for increasing cloudiness statewide. There's a chance of afternoon showers over the northeast and central sections. Highs should range from the mid-60s northwest to around 80 in the south. For the Twin Cities, increasing clouds with a slight chance of a shower toward evening, a 60% chance of showers after dark. It's currently 61 in Bemidji, 72 in Mankato, 73 in the Twin Cities. And Gary, that's the latest from the newsroom.
All right. Thank you, Stephen. 25 minutes before 1, we're looking today on midday at the results of yesterday's primary election, looking ahead to the November general election. Chris Gilbert has joined us. And, Chris, before we get back to our callers, we've got a full bank of callers. We should, run down very briefly again the actual election results, which we started to do a little earlier this hour and then got distracted. Rod Grams, of course, easily won renomination. Mark Dayton won the DFL primary. Mike Cerisi finished second. Jerry Janusich third. Rebecca Yanish fourth. Independence Party Senate primary, James Gibson with 47%, followed by Leslie Davis, Buford Johnson, Fred Askew. In the Constitution Party Senate primary, David Swan defeated Derek Schramm, 63%, 27%. In the 4th District congressional race, which received a lot of attention, Betty McCollum in the DFL column. Betty McCollum got 50% of the vote, Steve Novak 23%, Chris Coleman 19%, Kathy Hartnett 8%. Linda Runbeck faced only token opposition for the Republican nomination. And in the Independence Party primary in the 4th District, Tom Foley defeated Pam Ellison 63% to 37%. Some other election results in Republican congressional primaries. Second District, Mark Kennedy defeated Joe Wagner, 79%, 21%. In the 5th District, Frank Taylor defeated Chris Flynn. In the 7th District, Glenn Menzie defeated Alita Eden. And we don't know who won the 8th District congressional primary in the Republican Party. Bob Lemon and Warren Nelson essentially finished tied. The last we saw, there was a difference of, let's see if I do my math right, 64 votes, and that was with one precinct missing, so there will almost automatically be a recount in the in District 8 in the Republican primary. In the Democratic primary election yesterday in the 3rd District, Sue Schuff defeated Daryl Stanton. Independent Party House primary in District 2, down the southwestern part of the state, Gerald Brecky defeated Stan Benz, 52% to 48%, but that's only about a 20-vote difference, so there'll be a recount there. A couple of legislative races to pass along, in case you missed it. Closely watched State Senate primary, Republican primary in the Stillwater area. Michelle Bachmann has unseated longtime State Senator Gary Leidig. Phyllis Kahn in District 59B, this is a House race now. Longtime DFL Representative Phyllis Kahn held off a challenge from Brian Beal and ended up winning fairly convincingly, 68% to 32%. And a closely watched primary state Senate primary election, DFL primary election in St. Paul, Randy Kelly defeated David Murphy. So that brings you up to date on some of the key election results. Be interesting, Chris, to see how those congressional recounts turn out, although I would think at least in the 8th District, James Oberstar would still be heavily favored to win re-election.
Very few people would think that Oberstar is in any sort of trouble right now, and it remains to be seen how the minor parties might affect the 2nd District race. If the results hold, Gerald Brecky replaces Stan Benz, who's run three times before, and received between, I believe, 3% and 6% of the vote each time. The 2nd District was very heavy for Ross Perot in 1992, although it's still unclear whether Brecky will be able able to attract enough support to make a significant difference on the Mingy versus Kennedy race there.
16.2% of Minnesota's eligible voters actually voted yesterday. 16.2%. Not a big turnout. Stephanie joins us from Finlayson, and I understand you were an election judge yesterday, Stephanie?
Yes, I was. And we had a great turnout up here. Over 50% of our registered voters.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's why I called.
What was happening in Finlayson that got everybody to the polls?
We're in the county that is going through the split the county debate, which will be on the ballot for the general election.
One of those hot local races.
Yes, right? Yes, definitely.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot for calling.
Yep, thanks.
Appreciate the information.
Right, that's Pine County. I suspect Orono and Long Lake probably had higher than average turnout as well with the vote on the merger, which I believe Orono residents passed it and Long Lake residents defeated it, I believe.
Now, might that tell us, Chris, that at the state level or even the national level for that matter, the apparent voter apathy is a reflection of the fact that a lot of people think that government doesn't have any impact on their life whatsoever, but if you take it down to the local level where it really makes... it's clearly making a difference in your life. People get more fired up.
Right, and you can find the races in certain places. Green Bay, Wisconsin yesterday had very high voter turnout on a sales tax increase to renovate Lambeau Field for the Packers. You know, those kinds of things do pop up from time to time. They tend to be the exceptions to the rule. I'll be interested to see whether the 4th Congressional District had higher than normal turnout. There's another place where there was were two races, the Independence Party, relatively few people still voting in that primary, but the DFL primary, which we've mentioned several times. When people find ways to connect to it, when they find maybe the information that one of our previous callers has had difficulty finding, it does tend to spur their interest. A presidential year is supposed to be a better year for turnout. Minnesota is also a state that tends to have higher than average turnout, but I don't hear a lot of students talking to me about Bush versus Gore versus Nader versus Buchanan and Hagelin and all the other people running. There just doesn't seem to be a lot of talk about it, even when there are races which you would think, at least as insofar as we have structured the news cycle, should generate a lot of interest. And the DFL Senate race continues to be the big example there that did not draw a lot of people out. In some respects, Janicich did better relative to the other candidates because turnout was low, because it was that core DFL, labor, Iron Range, and people who are too tend to support the party's endorsed candidate no matter what, who are more likely to show up. So in some respects, the support for the other candidates is depressed, and Janicich comes out looking a little better.
One of the big winners yesterday was Michelle Bachmann, who, as we noted just a few minutes ago, in the Republican Party primary in State Senate District 56, unseated the longtime Republican State Senator Gary Leidig. And Michelle Bachmann joins us this afternoon. Good afternoon, and congratulations.
Good afternoon. It's great to be on your show today. Thank you, Gary.
Now, you had party endorsement, and won fairly convincingly when all was said and done, 60% to 40%. How'd you win so by such a large margin?
Well,
usually people have a lot of trouble unseating an incumbent.
Yes, absolutely. And I do want to thank Senator Leidig for his 28 years of service to the district. He's been here for a long time. He has a great number of supporters, and his support among them is very deep. And I know that this was a hard day for him and also for his supporters. It's a tough time, and I feel for him. I have compassion. This is not an easy day.
Mm-hmm. Was he just too liberal in your mind?
Well, I believe in the minds of the voters, there's a message that they wanted to hear their candidate take to St. Paul. And I believe that the message that we were able to articulate was the one that resonated in the minds of the voters. And it's really the way I think most mainstream Minnesotans live and the way they think, and that's that they want to keep more of their income. So permanent tax relief is what I heard. Since April 1st, I've been knocking on doors, Gary, and that's probably the number one issue I've heard. Old people, senior citizens, down to college-age youth, they one and the same. They have talked about tax relief and how they need to have more of their income.
Mm-hmm. If you're elected to the state senate, of course, you have to win the November general election, and I guess that might turn out to be a good close race. But if you get elected, can you work with the Senate Republicans? I know Senate Republican Leader Dick Day was a real active supporter of Mr. Leidig, and... was pretty upset that Gary Leidig was even challenged.
Well, I understand Dick Day's reasoning behind supporting Senator Leidig. I understand that completely. I did receive a congratulatory call from Senator Day last evening and an offer to work with our campaign. As a matter of fact, we're holding a press conference here in Stillwater at 1 o'clock, and Dick Day will be present to offer his support, help, and assistance in every way, because our goal is to keep this seat Republican in November. That's what we plan to do.
And if you're elected to the legislature, what would be beyond tax cuts, any other top priorities for you?
Returning the entire surplus to the people who paid it. That's uppermost in people's minds. They want to see government reduce its level of spending, go on a diet, if you will, and to return the entire surplus.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Gary. Bye-bye.
Michelle Bachmann, who is going to be the Republican Party's, or is the Republican Party's, nominee now for the state Senate seat in District 56, basically the Stillwater area. Chris Gilbert is with us to talk about yesterday's election results, look ahead to November as well. And were you surprised, Chris, that a longtime legislator like Gary Leidig would get challenged in the first place, lose the endorsement in the second place, and then lose the nomination in the third place?
It, once again, Gary, maybe belies Republican Party Chair Eibensteiner's claim that Republicans are a big, happy family with a strong endorsement process. It's extremely rare for an incumbent to be knocked off in a primary election when there is not scandal, personal difficulties, you know, something really fundamental that turns people away, especially after a long and a very effective, I understand, I haven't been here 28 years, but Mr. Leidig, respected on both sides of the aisle in St. Paul. But the Republican Party officials there felt that maybe some of the assets that Mr. Leidig had that they certainly appreciated, particularly being in the minority for so many years in the state Senate, were assets that Michelle Bachmann will also be able to bring. And she also brings a message that is more in line with the Republican Party's self-image. It may not be the image of the Republican Party among most voters, and I don't think all mainstream Minnesotans necessarily fall along the lines as Ms. Bachmann suggested, but there's no question that she fits much closer to the core of how the Republican Party wants to see itself and present itself than Mr. Leidig, and that results in a really impressive victory for her. A big surprise when an incumbent who's done a good job is turned out without something really negative weighing against him, aside from his issue positions in contrast with her at this point in time.
Lots of callers on the line with comments about yesterday's primary election and the upcoming November election. Barry, your comment, please.
Hi, am I on?
Yes, you are.
Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to make a quick comment and respond to the people who are complaining about not being able to cross over parties in the primary election. I think it performs a function. It's an opportunity for the party faithful, for the parties to call in their party faithful and democratically pick their candidates that they're going to be voting for in November. And I'm just wondering if these people are maybe thinking more of the general election, which they can cross over and pick who they want once the choices in each of the parties have been narrowed down.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks.
Okay. Thank you for your comment. Indeed. Do you suppose we will move? Will there be some big changes, you think, in the primary system here? Maybe move to a closed primary where only officially declared party members could vote in a primary, or some other arrangement like you were talking about before, some kind of a Louisiana model, something
the
like
open
that.
Primaries. No, I don't think so. The one switch I think will be discussed is the timing of the primary, and particularly the timing of the entire process from precinct caucus night through convention into primary, perhaps moving the primary up. One of the predecessors of Mr. Erlandson as DFL party chair, Dick Sinise, had a lot of ideas about altering that process. I don't think a lot of DFLers were happy with the weekend caucuses this year and with the double caucuses on the first weekend. And so I think you'll see talk about the schedule, but it's very difficult in a state, I think, to move from choosing your primary ballot on election day to being more tied into the parties. In Pennsylvania, where I grew up, you declared Republican or Democrat. I remember we never had to stand in line because everybody in our district was from the other party, and so there were very few in my parents' party. And but you picked that party in advance. You were labeled as that officially on the registration rolls. You could, of course, cross over on general election day, but the primary was very much focused. And Pennsylvania has had a hard time switching away from that system to more like Minnesota, where you have some flexibility. I, too, have found that there are several races that I would like to vote on in primaries, and some are in one party and some are in another. So I can appreciate sometimes you have to make the choice, and I tend to choose the ballot for the race that I've been most interested in and most following, and that's not necessarily always the same party, though I voted in the DFL primary yesterday because that seemed the most interesting to me.
A couple of minutes ago, we talked with Michelle Bachmann, who won that Republican primary in District 56, the state Senate race. Gary Leidig, longtime legislator who she defeated, is on the line now. And good afternoon, Mr. Leidig.
Well, good afternoon.
Is it a good afternoon? Michelle Bachmann was saying the party's pulling by getting together behind her now. Are you supporting her and endorse her?
Well, I haven't gotten that far. I'm out pulling up lawn signs, which is a humbling experience, and thanking. I'm spending today thanking the hundreds of people that work so hard in my race. That's the focus I have today.
What happened? Do you feel like you lost touch with the local party activists? Is that at the root of the problem?
Well, I think I feel that as an incumbent, you face the reality of producing something. As an incumbent, as a sitting legislator, there's a reality that in order to pass legislation, you have to work with the governor, work with the House, work with the other political parties. And as a challenger, you enjoy a great luxury, and that is no matter what the legislature does, you can do better. And I think that's a message that apparently worked very well yesterday.
Mm-hmm. Are you at all concerned about the direction of the Republican Party? I know during our election coverage last night that came up in discussion, that that the party may be drifting a little bit away from kind of that middle ground.
Well, I guess I'm more concerned that those who are drifting away from middle ground are not as tolerant or as flexible for those of us who while we are conservatives, work as again, even though I am a conservative, I face the reality of having to produce something. And I think what I guess I'm concerned about is I think political parties should comprise the full spectrum from left to right. But I guess what I am concerned about is a growing intolerance of those who aren't perhaps far more conservative than others in the party.
Thank you, Senator. Good luck to you. And
thank you.
Thanks for all the state service.
Well, thank you very much.
Gary Leidig, a longtime state senator who was defeated in yesterday's primary election. He will not be returning to the state Senate. Tom Foley may be going to Congress. Mr. Foley is the Independence Party's nominee now for the 4th District Congressional seat that was held by Bruce Vento, and Tom Foley joins us. Good afternoon, Mr. Foley, and congratulations.
Hi, Gary, how are you doing? Thank you very much.
Campaign underway now for the general election?
Campaign is in full swing, as it has been before the primary, and like other candidates. On a personal note, I'm sorry to see Gary Leidig leaving the state Senate. I think he did a wonderful job and was a great public official for Minnesota.
I asked you this question last night, but I'm going to ask it again today. Do you see your role here in the 4th District Congressional race as primarily that of a spoiler, or do you really believe you have a chance to defeat the Republican and Democratic Party? Because they're going to have a lot of money. We're going to be
competitive. We won't have all the big money and the special interest money that will be dominating the Republican and Democratic parties, but obviously the extremists of both those parties will be controlling the candidates. They'll be like little marionettes responding to the national parties, and I think this is a chance for the independence movement to do something for the people's interest, not the special interests of the big money of the Democrat and Republican Party.
You were a longtime Democrat yourself. What do you tell your old DFL friends when they say to you, Mr. Foley, all you're going to do here is ruin it for our candidate, and you're going to hand the election to the Republican, Linda Runbeck?
Well, if people really know my record, they'll know that as county attorney in Ramsey County, that my support came from Republicans, independents, as well as Democrats. I've gotten a lot of calls from Republican supporters this morning, Democratic supporters, but most importantly, independent. I think the two political parties keep going to the extreme fringes of their base, and there's 60% of the people that want someone that looks out for the people's interests. They want to join this independence movement. I'm proud to work with them, and I think this independent movement is going to move on to Washington, D.C. Governor Ventura started it 2 years ago, and we're going to continue it this year.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate your joining us, and again, congratulations. Good luck to you.
Thank you very much.
Independence Party's 4th District candidate for Congress, Tom Foley, who will be facing Republican State Senator Linda Runbeck and DFL State Representative Betty McCollum. Before we wrap up here, we've been joined now by another candidate for the U.S. Senate. Now, there are actually four major parties in the state of Minnesota, of course, the Republicans and the Democrats, and you probably know about the Independence Party. There is also the Constitution Party. And David Swan won the Constitution Party's primary yesterday for the U.S. Senate seat, and he will now be on the November general election ballot. He joins us. Mr. Swan, congratulations.
Thank you, Gary, and good afternoon.
Have you launched your general election campaign yet? Or?
Well, we yes, we have. We're planning. We don't have all the money that these other gentlemen do, but we have our presidential candidate, Howard Phillips, coming here next Tuesday, September 19th, for a public meeting. There is a third-party presidential debate coming to Minnesota late in September that I believe the governor is helping to sponsor and put on.
Mm-hmm.
We're planning to run an active campaign in the sense of getting the issues out there. We believe that there is a vast difference between the Constitution Party's principled approach to limited government and the establishment parties in Washington today.
Can you give us a little overview of some of the party principles? Are you pretty much like the libertarians, or what's your take on that?
No, the birth certificate of this country is the Declaration of Independence, and the framework for our government is the Constitution. We are the only party that supports a return to a constitutionally limited government. If you give Mark Dayton $1,000 from your taxpayer's pocket, he'll spend it and ask you for more. If you give Rod Grams and the Republicans $1,000, they'll spend $950 of it, give you $50 back, and then campaign on the promise that they should have given you back $50 more. If you give that $1,000 to a Constitution Party official who's in power, he'll say, wait a minute, the Constitution doesn't authorize the government to even spend this money. We're going to give $950 of it back to you. The federal government should only be spending about $50 of that.
Okay.
Well, that's a picture of the difference between the establishment parties and the Constitution Party.
You're going to be able to launch a full-blown statewide campaign, Mr. Swan?
Well, we're campaigning with the ideas, and no, I'm not planning to walk from International Falls to Albert Lea. I'm keeping my day job, but I know that we can get the voters interested in this because we're really the only party that offers an alternative to big spending and big government. We have, for example, the Republicans in 1994 won Congress and immediately with their contract to America wanted to limit the size of government, or so they said. The federal budget that year was $1.4 trillion. This year it's $2 trillion. So with the Republicans in charge of Congress, annual spending went up $600 billion a year. I don't call that a commitment to limited constitutional government, and that's a vast difference between us and the establishment parties in Washington today.
Thank you so much for joining us, sir, and good luck to you.
Thank you.
Bye. Talking with you. David Swan, who is the Constitution Party's nominee for the U.S. Senate seat. Chris Gilbert, as we wrap up here, any lessons we should take from yesterday's primary election? Big picture stuff?
Big picture stuff. I don't think this means the emergence of big money politics and only people with very deep pockets can win major races in Minnesota. It points out the weakness of the parties. In contrast to Mr. Foley's analysis, it is most certainly not true that the parties control the messages of their candidates. If only, I think the party chairs are shaking their heads. But it's a candidate-centered world, and it's come to Minnesota in a little bit more direct sense through this DFL primary than we've had before. The other thing is that if the primary stakes seem low to people, the general election stakes are quite high. Control of the state house, the Republicans just took it back last time. The DFL has a chance there. Bush versus Gore and the outcome that might have to affect races in the state and overall control of the U.S. Congress. Only 7 seats the Democrats would need to pick up in the U.S. House. 5 seats in the Senate, though this is a set of incumbent senators, more Republican than Democrat, a lot of them elected in 1994, like Rod Grams, running for the first time. Those people tend to be more vulnerable. In 1986, with a still popular Ronald Reagan, an awful lot of Republican senators elected with him in 1980 got turned out. In fact, the Democrats regained control, which they didn't lose until 1994. So the stakes are high in a very broad sense, and we could keep going, the Supreme Court justice election mm-hmm. and all of that. And I think that will pique people's interest, particularly with a presidential race.
And might we expect a high-minded, issue-oriented philosophical discussion of the issues when all is said and done, or is it going to turn out to be a battle of the ads and kind of nasty?
It will be a battle of the ads, and I never want to sit here and think that I would expect less than the candidates to tell us what they're going to do and why. And as we've said many times, there are very, very clear contrasts with all four of these people. I don't know if we'll actually see Mr. Swan in any debates with the other three, and maybe not even Mr. Gibson in all the debates with Dayton and Grahams. But boy, if you think there are no differences between DFLers and Republicans, this race proves you wrong. I think that's true, wrong generally. And if you want a lot of different choices, a lot of different possibilities, you've got them here. And I hope people will find that information, will absorb what they have. The advertisements, I think, will turn nasty because the race is going to be close, but I think we should always hope for a good campaign, for candidates to put their best foot forward and let voters choose.
Chris, we're out of time, but thanks for coming by.
Always good to be up here.
Chris Gilbert, who is chair of the Political Science Department at Gustavus Adolphus College in St. Peter, joining us today on Midday as we look back at the primary election held yesterday and look ahead to the November general election. That's it for Midday today. Gary Eichen here. Thanks for tuning in.
Learn more about the candidates running for office this fall. MinnesotaPublicRadio.org's Campaign 2000 section gives you an extensive collection of material to help you make an informed decision. Point your browser to MinnesotaPublicRadio.org and click News.
You're listening to Minnesota Public Radio. Partly cloudy sky, 73 degrees at KNRW-FM, 91.1 Minneapolis and St. Paul. There is a slight chance for some rain in the Twin City metropolitan area yet today, but by tomorrow it's going to be sunny again with a high temperature in the mid-60s.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Tom Gelton, and this is Talk of the Nation. Of all the tough questions the next U.S. president will face, few will be as challenging as the decision of when to send U.S. troops overseas. Governor Bush's chief foreign policy advisor, Condoleezza Rice, told the Republican convention this summer that a Bush administration would pick its fights carefully.
George W. Bush believes that America has a special responsibility to keep the peace, that the fair cause of freedom depends on our strength and purpose. He